ready or not, here I come. You can't hide. Gonna find you and take it slowly. You can't run away from these stars I got. Oh, baby, hey, baby, 'cause I got a lot. Oh, yeah.
And welcome to Green and Gold Forever. I'm Eric Drews, broadcasting from Oshkosh, Wisconsin, and we'll be joined shortly here by Matt McLean. And whether the Packers are ready or not, the season is here. Hopefully they are ready. We saw some glimpses of that off and on during the last couple of weeks with these preseason games, but now it counts for real. So hopefully they can figure out some of the things they need to correct and continue to do some of the things they've done well. But we'll see. We got a real opponent and a real good one coming to Lambeau Field this weekend. And with that, we'll bring in Matt McLean out on the cross. And Matt, are you happy that the season's finally here?
Oh, absolutely. I think we're all tired of the preseason thing and really, really excited to get underway. And it starts with a bang with the Niners here.
Yeah, without a doubt, the NFL sent a pretty good team to Lambeau Field. And I think both teams are going to find out something about themselves right off the bat here in 2012. So let's maybe real quickly touch on the last preseason game. Obviously, it's not going to resonate much to the rest of the season as a lot of the guys that played in that game aren't with the team anymore. Obviously, the big story is probably Graham Harrell. I saw nationally people seem to say how comfortable they are now with the quarterback situation, having seen Graham play well against Kansas City. I can't say I'd go that far yet. I was certainly happy to see him play much better. But it's one game. I mean, if this was a class, he's failed three tests and got an A on another. He's still not doing too well, in my opinion, if you use that metaphor. But I'm certainly more comfortable, but I don't know if I'm as comfortable as some of the writers and TV commentators have let on that they are.
Yeah, and we see the national media kind of overreact a lot on this kind of a thing. When one guy plays well, it's the most recent thing is what you remember. But yeah, one game out of four, I know he played with that bad offensive line with the second team. So, I mean, it was nice to see him play better. Obviously, that's something we needed. And to see him behind a better offensive line, you know, some of the better weapons on the field with him. So, I mean, he had a lot more opportunities to make plays. But, I mean, he was still missing a lot of passes he should have been hitting in those first three games. So, the whole blame's not on the offensive line and the receivers that were out there with him. But, obviously, it's nice to see him play well. I'm still not comfortable with the backup situation, but I guess you feel maybe a little bit better about it.
Yeah, I would have to agree. It's I don't know. At least he proved he could do it. But we're talking Kansas City and their backups. I mean, who knows how many of the guys that he was torching are even in the NFL today?
Yeah.
Well, speaking of guys that are no longer, at least with the Packers, we got our big round of cuts this past weekend. Of course, the team had to get down to 53 men. Some of the main people that were cut were B.J. Coleman. And then the other one I was kind of surprised by was Daniel Muir, and then obviously Torrey Gurley, kind of a victim of numbers situation. Was there anybody that's stuck out to you in terms of the people who were cut?
I guess I would say probably Gurley and Muir were the top two for me. I didn't expect Coleman to go so quickly, but Muir, I guess from everything I'd heard, had looked really good, and with the lack of depth there, I figured he was a sure thing to make it, so that was kind of a surprise. Mm-hmm. And I think it seemed like ever since last season, seemed like Gurley was going to be hanging around here for a while. So, I mean, he got on the practice squad last year, and it seemed like he was going to maybe make the roster as the sixth guy, but instead they go a different route. And so they kept Boykin, who had a great week in the last week of the preseason, and I guess since, you know, the beginning of the preseason, people were saying how good he's looked, and he's been probably the most consistent receiver throughout training camp other than Jordy. So mm-hmm. He seemed like he earned it. I mean, he's not that big-bodied guy like Gurley, so I thought maybe that was one of the reasons they kept him around, but I guess he impressed enough to win that spot.
Torrey Gurley played very well, especially against Kansas City. He wasn't quite as consistent in the preseason as Boykin was. I don't know. I think eventually it's nice to carry some of those guys on the roster, but you can't keep all of them. And I guess that's just one of those things you just have to make the decision one time, and Boykin's kind of the new guy, and it seems like Ted Thompson, if he has his choice, a lot of times will pick the new fling over the old fling. So I guess I was kind of disappointed, but I don't think it's a huge loss. I'm sure he'll catch on with another team. The thing that concerned me the most about the final 53 breakdown is there's only seven offensive linemen on the roster. Does that concern you as much as it concerns me?
Yeah, it's pretty concerning. I mean, obviously the guys who were backing up, the starters weren't getting the job done, so I guess why keep around a guy who's just going to be a turnstile there? Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't be surprised if they go out and get somebody. You can't have only two backup offensive linemen for the whole season. Mm-hmm. I know Dietrich Smith is pretty versatile, and It's just
Can he
still,
play four positions at once, you think?
No. I mean, if you have two injuries, then all of a sudden you have no backups. What are you going to do? And you see a lot of times so many injuries throughout the offensive line, not just on the Packers, but every team in the NFL. So two backups isn't going to cut it. I imagine they do something here and pick up somebody. But, yeah, the two, if they stick with two, that's pretty concerning.
Well, they have 11 cornerbacks, so they can play some diverse coverages with that, and hopefully they will be able to fool people into scoring no points, so they won't even need an offensive line. So now everybody turns their attention to the San Francisco 49ers, a big-time Week 1 matchup, a nationally televised game on Fox, and I think this was the matchup that almost everybody expected to be the NFC Championship game from about the two-thirds point of last season. Both teams really steamrolled through the regular season, and then both had the same fate befall them, losing to a team they both probably felt they should have beaten in the New York Giants in the playoffs. San Francisco, obviously, a much closer game than the Packers had with the Giants, but nevertheless were unable to move on to the Super Bowl for the first time in about 17 years. So we got a big-time matchup, and I know San Francisco's got a big-time sports history. They got the Joe Montana. They got Steve Young. They had Barry Bonds, who they don't acknowledge that much anymore. They have the hippie counterculture that they're kind of proud of. But when I think of San Francisco, Matt, before I get your comments, I think of this.
Whatever happened to predictability?
Milkman, I don't know about you, but I think
I guess I was thinking maybe you were going to play the Rice-A-Roni jingle or something.
Well, either way, I think it might be a full house in the backfield for Aaron Rodgers with that kind of defense. What are you expecting to see this Sunday?
It's kind of difficult to tell because, I mean, I think this is probably the best defense that we've played in a while. So it's kind of going to be interesting to see how Rodgers and this offense handles it. I think they'll be okay. I think as good of any defense as there is, I think that our offense is still good enough to put up a good amount of points. But I guess kind of what I'm thinking is I think that the San Francisco offense is going to be struggling a little bit this year to put up as many points as they did last year, and they weren't great last year, obviously, either. Mm-hmm. But the run game was good. I know they're deep in the backfield this year, but Gore's getting older. Alex Smith had his best season he's ever had, and he only threw 17 touchdowns. So I don't know. I just see us outscoring them, I would think, come this Sunday. I know the defense is good. It might be a little lower scoring than we're used to, but I think that we'll just eke it out.
Yeah, I thought that for pretty much the whole off season. And maybe I'm putting way too much stock in the preseason, and I think I probably have been, but I am still not sold that the Packers offense is ready to play in 2012. I know they haven't had a chance to really have everybody on the field at once at all during the preseason, but they just have not impressed me at all, and it makes me very nervous going into this game. And I hope that the Packers' defense is good enough to kind of hold San Francisco's offense in check. I think they can. I tend to agree with you that I think the San Francisco offense is very fragile, and I think they have some people that really overachieved last year, and if they don't all overachieve again this year, they might not be able to score very many points. And so I'm hoping that the Packers can at least do that for 1 week, but, I mean, Aaron Rodgers again, he didn't look all that sharp against Kansas City. I know it was just kind of a quick game. He might not have been even trying that hard, but he ended the preseason this year with a 53.8 quarterback rating, which I went back and looked at the numbers for every Packers quarterback in the preseason since 2001 who threw at least 28 passes, so about 7 a game. And his, out of the 30 that met that criteria, he was 25th. The only worse than his performance this year was his own performance in 2005, his rookie year. Akili Smith in 2003, Brian Brohm in 08, Doug Peterson in 03, and everybody's favorite Packers backup quarterback, Tim Couch, in 2004. Not that that means a ton, but just the fact that he's down so far below his normal production in the preseason, I know I've kind of beating a dead horse here, but I really think that that's a red flag that can't be completely ignored, and I'm sure they'll turn it around, but I don't know if they'll turn it around fast enough to really be the dynamic offense we're expecting right out of the gate in 2012. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I'm still not putting as much stock into that as you. I know it's really bad. I mean, 53 is just awful. But I just think that this is not a good matchup for the 49ers. Because, like I said earlier, I think that our offense is at least going to put up some points, but I don't think that their offense can really keep pace with any offense like our type. If they were to play, you know, like the Saints or the Patriots or the Packers, I just don't think that they can keep up as good as their defense is. I just don't think that their offense can put up enough points. So I guess the preseason numbers don't scare me, you know, nearly at all, and they seem to scare you quite a bit. And maybe I'm wrong. Maybe they won't be able to just turn it on like I'm maybe blindly hoping for. But it just seems like I said in the past episode here, that we've seen it so consistently over the past few years that I can't imagine they come out and you know, they're not themselves.
Well, and I guess that's what concerns me, is part of that consistency that we've seen has included the preseason. They always start red hot in the preseason. And, I mean, this isn't the difference between an A and a B on a test. This is an A and an F. So, we'll see. But, I don't know, I guess, what would you pick as a score?
That's a tough one. I think a little bit lower, maybe. I would say maybe 23-17.
Packers, I'm guessing?
Packers, yeah.
I guess part of me thinks they're going to lose this game, a big part of me. But also, Aaron Rodgers has never lost an opener. McCarthy usually has him ready to play. So I'll say they'll eke this one out. I'll say the Packers will win 24-20, but I don't have a lot of faith in that. I think it might be a rough start, and with two games in 4 days, you can find yourself in a pretty deep hole to start the 2012 season before you blink, with the Bears coming in just next Thursday. Some interesting stats here about the San Francisco 49ers. I know a lot of people remember that the 49ers and Packers have played each other quite a bit in the last 20 years for two teams that aren't in the same division, and the Packers have absolutely dominated this rivalry. They've beaten San Francisco 9 straight times in the regular season. The last time they lost to them was November 4th, 1990. The starting quarterbacks were Don Majkowski and Joe Montana. They've beat them 13 of the last 14 times they played, the one loss being the catch 2 with 3 seconds left to Terrell Owens in the 98 wildcard game. And I wondered what that meant for Packers history as far as dominance, and they have some prehistoric complete dominations of teams way long time ago. The record actually that I could find was they beat the Chicago Cardinals 16 straight times from 1938 to 1946. That included a 10-year stretch where they were 18-1-1 against the Chicago Cardinals. They beat Detroit 15 of 16 times, including 10 straight from 1940 to 1948. And they also beat Philadelphia 17 of the first 18 times they played in the regular season from 1933 to 1970. Coming back to some more recent times, they actually beat the Chicago Bears 10 straight times from 1994 to 1998. And then after trading off a couple of seasons, they beat them 7 straight from 2000 to 2003, giving them a 19-3 record against the Bears from November of 1992 through the 2003 season. And also the Detroit Lions, they beat 10 straight in McCarthy's first 10 meetings with the Lions. That's 21-4 against Detroit in their last 25 meetings. So that's they've really obviously just shown they've had a lot of success in the last few years. Another interesting one that really made me angry while I was researching is that in the regular season, they've beaten the New York Giants 6 of the last 7 times. Of course, that doesn't really translate into much of anything, 0-2 in the playoffs. And another interesting fact I had, just going in some opening day numbers here to kind of fit the theme of the week, the Packers have actually played at home since 1980 25 times in 32 opening day games, which is a remarkable stat. They played 10 straight home games to start the season from 1986 through 1995. The Packers also have an opportunity to make some team history this weekend. If they are able to beat the San Francisco 49ers, that will be their 6th consecutive opening day win, dating back to 2007. And that will be a new team record, breaking the old record of 5 that is shared with the 07 through 2011 Packers and a team from the past. And Matt, I mentioned this earlier on a podcast about 3 or 4 months ago. Do you remember which team they'll be overcoming here?
For opening day wins?
Consecutive opening day wins.
No, I don't.
It's actually 1980 through 84, which really shocked me. This team from the 1980s, of course, in typical Packers 80s fashion, followed up this 5 straight wins to start a season with 5 straight losses to start the season from 1985 to 1989, getting outscored by a combined 51-134. So some weird times in Packers history back then. Okay, so that's some historical context to put Sunday's game into. But before we start this week's What If topic, we'll actually talk some fantasy. We had a question on our Facebook page, and if you ever have a fantasy question or want to contribute your own opinions on the Packers events or games, go to our Facebook page at Green and Gold Podcast, or you can hit us up on Twitter at Green Gold Forever. The number forever on Twitter. And we actually had someone go to Facebook and ask us a question, and it's our super fan Caleb, and he wanted to know some fantasy advice. So Matt will have that for us.
His question was about Trent Richardson, and I think a lot of people have the same question here. So he said that he had picked him as his third running back and wondered if it was a good value. Now, it seemed to me, if I'm remembering right, it seemed earlier in this offseason before he had that second knee injury that he was projected to be a top two running back for sure. So it seems from everything that I've read, he's still expected to go week one. And I know that knee injury scares a lot of people away. But, I mean, if you're able to get him as your third running back in a league, that seems like pretty good value to me. This guy's going to get a ton of touches and, you know, a pretty bad offense otherwise. And when they still have a pretty good offensive line. So it just seems like he'll be the starting running back all season there. He's going to get a lot of carries, and it seems like that's a pretty good value for a third running back. So if you're able to get him at that point in the draft or even as a late second running back, I couldn't argue with that. I think that that's a pretty good pick. What about you?
Yeah, he's going to get a lot of opportunities to play, that's for sure. And especially with a rookie quarterback, you're not really sure how good their passing game is going to be. They might rely quite heavily on him, especially later in the season. As far as starting him right out the gate, I guess it would depend on who else you have on your team. But I certainly would feel pretty comfortable with him near the top of my my running back depth chart, either the second or third guy I have on there. So I guess you'd have to play the matchups a little bit maybe in the earlier part of the season, but I think he's going to be a guy that maybe towards October, November is probably a guy I might consider keeping in there every week.
Yeah, I probably wouldn't start him week one just because with almost any rookie, I would be afraid to play week one just because you don't quite know what you're going to get yet. Mm-hmm. So, I think you're right. I think a couple weeks in, we'll see what he's doing, and he might even be a good starting option. Mm-hmm. I'm assuming he's not going to be a free agent in any leagues for a nice pickup or anything as the season goes, but keep him on your bench if you got him, I would say for sure. Mm-hmm. Other than that, just a couple of quick notes around the league here. If for those of you who didn't hear yet, Maurice Jones-Drew reported into camp. He's still not expected to start week one, though. It looks like Rashad Jennings will get the start there. So for everybody who picked him in the first or second round or wherever he went, it looks like he's going to be sitting on your bench for a week here. And also Adrian Peterson, who is still a big question mark going into week one, is going to be a game-time decision. So it kind of looks like in that situation, if you have somebody else you can play instead of Peterson, that it might not be a bad option.
Those dreaded game time decisions.
I know. Those drive me crazy, especially if they're, you know, like an afternoon Sunday or a Sunday night game or something, and you have to make your decision before that. Mm-hmm. You know, it's definitely, I'm sure, bitten us all a time or two before.
Is there any news on Jason Witten as it pertains to this Wednesday's game?
I believe he's unlikely to go. I don't think he is expected to start with his spleen injury.
Okay. Well, another little tidbit for you, Matt, just so you can tell all your friends and they'll know how impressive you are as far as your NFL knowledge. This Wednesday's game will be the first Wednesday game in the history of the NFL, and Wednesday is the last day to never have had an NFL game, so there's been
really
one every other day of the week.
I wonder when there was a Tuesday game or a Friday game. It doesn't seem like those happen very often
either. There's been multiple Friday games. The one I remember, obviously, is the Christmas Eve Packers-Vikings NFC North Championship game in 2004 was a Friday.
Oh, that's right.
And Tuesday was a couple years ago because the Sunday night game between the Eagles and the Vikings got blizzarded out, and so they had to move it to Tuesday night football.
That's
the only Tuesday game in the history of the league. Probably never won't be another one for a long time to come, I would imagine.
Yeah.
Okay, so right after this, we're going to go to the What If segment, and we got an interesting one from a time period we haven't been able to talk about yet, and that is, what if the Green Bay Packers had traded for quarterback Jim Everett in 1986? So stay tuned. Welcome back to Green and Gold Forever, and we're about to get into our What If segment, but real quick, we actually have a new blog up on a website called Podbean, so if you go to podbean.greengoldforever, like our Twitter handle, .com, you can actually go and see our entire archives, and you can stream them. You don't have to download them. And we'll also be adding some blog elements from time to time throughout the season. I'm not sure what kind of regularity that will have, but just look for that, and that's probably the best place to go to listen to our podcast, have all of our archives, like I said, and it's just a great place to check up on everything Green and Gold Forever. So take a look at it. Podbean, no www, it's just Podbean, exactly how it sounds, .greengoldforever.com. And you can also hit us up on Twitter at Green Gold Forever and our Facebook page, Green and Gold Forever Podcast. And with that, let's go to What If.
What if the past had turned out differently?
The Green Bay Packers had won the Super Bowl.
I was told that playing in Green Bay was not an option.
With the 24th selection in the 2005 NFL Draft, the Green Bay Packers select Aaron Rodgers, quarterback, California.
And Mikowski appears hurt. Mikowski's in great pain, Ahmad.
And reliable sources now tell CBS Sports that Parcells is very close to accepting a Green Bay Packers offer.
Gentlemen, let me introduce to you the new head coach of the Green Bay Packers, Mr. Phil Bankston.
What would the past look like? What would the future look like if?
And this week's topic is one that we selected. It's from the 1980s, which we haven't had a chance to talk about much. It's what if the Green Bay Packers had traded for Jim Everett in 1986. There was a trade on the table. Of course, Jim Everett ended up becoming a longtime Los Angeles Ram. So let's go to the backstory for this event. By the end of the 1985 season, the Green Bay Packers had cultivated an ironclad identity for themselves. They weren't quite losers, but they weren't quite winners either. The Packers finished the 1985 season with an 8-8 record for the third consecutive year. In the five previous seasons, the Packers had compiled a record of 37-35-1. They averaged just one more point scored than they allowed. They made the playoffs once during the NFL Super Bowl tournament in 1982, when the strike-shortened season allowed 16 of 28 teams to participate in the playoffs. Packers head coach Forrest Gregg had decided that the team had peaked with his current roster, and it was time to start over. The team released many longtime veterans, including Packers Hall of Famers like linebacker Mike Douglas, tight end Paul Kaufman, and tackle Greg Cook. The biggest dismissal didn't occur until early September, when the team cut Packers Hall of Fame quarterback Lynn Dickey after 10 seasons with the club. Green Bay looked many different directions for a replacement for Dickey, who was one of the most statistically prolific quarterbacks in club history. The front runner for the job was third-year quarterback out of Wisconsin, Randy Wright, but he had limited experience, and when he had gotten his opportunities, he had performed quite poorly. In the third round of the 1986 draft, they had selected quarterback Robbie Bosco out of BYU, but he developed an arm injury in training camp and would be unavailable to play in 1986. They also signed Vince Ferragamo, the veteran who had quarterbacked the Los Angeles Rams to the Super Bowl 7 years earlier. When the 1986 season began, Randy Wright was the starter, but Ferragamo would be available in relief if needed. The duo combined to throw 8 interceptions in the first 2 games, and the Packers began 0-2, having lost by a combined 55-13. The Packers began looking for other options, and they found a good one. The Houston Oilers had drafted star quarterback Jim Everett out of Purdue with the 3rd pick of the 1986 NFL Draft, but they could not agree to an acceptable contract. Houston had finally given up and were looking to trade Everett to the highest bidder, but it wouldn't be cheap. They wanted multiple draft choices, including a 1987 first-round pick, plus a player or two that could contribute immediately. While that was a large price, the Packers were willing to pay it for the chance to get a surefire franchise quarterback for the first time since Bart Starr. They spent 3 days in mid-September working with both Houston and Jim Everett to work out a deal everyone could agree on. A tentative agreement was thought to have been reached, but it somehow fell apart. The Packers were left with nothing, and Jim Everett became a Los Angeles Ram. The Packers would have to manage with the quarterbacks they had and hope for improvement. Everett would go on to start 105 games for the Rams over the next 7 seasons and lead them to the playoffs 3 times, getting as far as the NFC Championship game in 1989. He would retire in 1997, ranked at the time within the top 20 all-time in completions, attempts, yards, and touchdowns. In Green Bay, Gregg's rebuilding job did get the team out of their mediocre ways. Instead, the Packers became one of the worst teams in the NFL, recording a record of 33-61-1 over the next 6 seasons. Gregg would step down after the 1987 season to take his other dream job as the head coach at his alma mater, Southern Methodist University. the Packers would have to go back to the drawing board once more, and from late 1991 through the summer of 1992, they began laying the foundation that would finally turn Green Bay back into a football powerhouse, where they have remained for the better part of the last two decades. But what if the Packers had been able to complete the deal for Jim Everett? Would Forrest Gregg have been able to rebuild the team into a contender faster? Would Everett have had the same success in Green Bay as he had in Los Angeles? And how would this affect the future of the team? What if the Green Bay Packers had traded for Jim Everett in 1986? Okay, so there's the backstory for this what-if topic. And Matt, would you like to go first, or would you like me to try?
I'll let you start.
Okay. Well, 1986, the team was pretty lousy, as mentioned in the intro there, that they had gotten rid of many of the players on the team. They had the 25th highest scoring team in the league, allowed the 27th most points. They got outscored on average by nearly 11 points a game, and went 4-12 that year, starting 0-6, which is the worst start in franchise history. So if they would have got Jim Everett, it would have been after week two, so they would have been able to have him for about 14 games. And Jim Everett at that time was a very young football player. I think now people kind of forget, but he was a very good player, especially early on in his career. He kind of tapered off towards the end, but he was still pretty productive. Led the NFL in touchdown passes at age 25 and 26, and he was a Pro Bowler at 27. And he had a pretty decent career, as mentioned. So he definitely could have been an upgrade for the Packers in 1986, especially over Randy Wright. They had one of the worst passing games in the NFL that year, and in subsequent years as well. The big thing, I guess, is I don't think he would have been all that great to start out. He kind of struggled, was mediocre his first 2 years with the Rams, and then he really exploded in 1988, had, you know, led the league in touchdowns, had a quarterback rating of 89, which for 1988 is near the top of the league. So I think if Jim Everett comes to Green Bay, I think they're a little bit better. I think 1986, I still think they're pretty bad. I think in 1987, they'll be a little bit better. That year was weird, of course, with the strike, the three games with replacement players, so I don't think that year is very much changed. I think the big one is, from all intents and purposes, Forrest Gregg was going to leave in 1987 to go to Southern Methodist anyways. He really wanted that job. Of course, they were trying to rebuild after they had received the death penalty that year. So I think he leaves regardless of how good Jim Everett is. And in all likelihood, they still hire Lindy Infante, since the Packers, I'm not predicting, are going to do much of anything to upset the NFL landscape in 86 and 87. The playoffs is pretty much unchanged. So Lindy Infante's Browns will have success, and we'd probably reach out to try to get him. So now all of a sudden we have Lindy Infante, who was very successful with a good quarterback in Bernie Kosar, and he had shown flashes of success with a guy like Don Majkowski, who could be very good at times, but also fought a lot of injuries throughout his career, and at times was very inconsistent. So I think that they would be noticeably better with Jim Everett at the helm of Lindy Infante's offense, especially considering that he would have been with a young Sterling Sharp. He also would have had other guys like Jackie Harris. Later on in that run, he would have had Brent Fulwood with him. So I think that you definitely could see in maybe 1988, maybe 1989 especially, you would have a team that's starting to come together real nicely. They had some really good talent on defense with Tim Harris and guys like that. They had some other guys on defense that could do things here and there. They drafted Leroy Butler in 1990. So I think that if Jim Everett comes on, that they really have a legitimate shot in 1989 to make the playoffs, and maybe even go on a little bit of a run. I wouldn't say any deeper than maybe a couple wins. But, you know, they could have had an opportunity to get the Packers back on the map, and I think it comes into another one of those situations where I think it complicates getting rid of Lindy Infante in 1991. So I think that the Packers probably would have returned to prominence quite a bit faster, but I don't think they would have become quite as dominant as they were. Obviously, this goes into the idea that Lindy Infante stays on. And if you look at Jim Everett's career, which obviously we're changing everything about it, but once he hit about the age of right around 30, he wasn't quite the same player as he was before as far as how productive he was. So I don't know. I think if Jim Everett is traded for the Packers, I think he helps the team a little bit, because I do think he wasn't a product of the system. He was a raw talent. But I think, if anything, it just kind of ruins the Packers' return as a dominant team, and maybe just they become kind of like a Lions-level team that's pretty good for the 90s, but ultimately a forgotten team, and I think changes everything about what the team are today. Maybe they're back to where they are now, but it definitely would be different names, different faces.
Okay, yeah, and you touched on a lot of points that I had wanted to mention here. So he was drafted by the Oilers, and we were looking to trade for him. If we were to get Everett at this point, I think it changes a whole lot about the franchise, not only in the late 80s, but as you mentioned, for the foreseeable future after that. So they become, in my opinion, a more consistent playoff team in the late 80s, like you said. They're there more often. Everett, in my opinion, was a much better NFL quarterback than Don Majkowski. I don't know if you agree with that.
Yeah, I do.
Okay, so I think with him at the helm instead of Majkowski, who is also, you know, often injured, having a much more consistent quarterback who honestly did probably a lot more with a little bit less, because I know he had some good receivers there.
Mm-hmm.
But to have, like you said, Sterling Sharp here and James Lofton at the end of his career with the Packers for a while, he had a lot of talent around him here, or I should say would have had yeah. a lot of talent around him here. He didn't actually get traded here, but Jim Everett coming here, like you said, in 88, that's when he really hit his stride, and Majkowski, when he was the Packers quarterback at that time period in 87 and 88, was, you know, still kind of getting used to playing and starting some games. So that's when Everett was really getting going here in 88 and 89, were two of his best seasons that he had. So this could be a team, you know, that maybe takes the Rams' place in that NFC Championship game in 89. He had 29 touchdowns and 17 interceptions that year, which was pretty good stats for that time period.
Yeah, 4,300 yards in 1989 is probably around 5,000 in adjusted for inflation for 2012.
Yeah. Yeah, so he put up huge numbers in 88 and 89. 88 he threw for 4,000 as well, and 90 he threw for just under 4,000 as well. So he was really, really playing lights out at quarterback at that time. So if we keep him, I'm assuming he's still on the team through 90, and then up to 91 is where it's kind of hard to judge how he's going to play on our team as opposed to the Rams, but 91 was a down year for Everett.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of puts us in a similar situation here with between Don Majkowski having a down year in 91 and Everett having a down year in 91. I think the main difference, though, in this situation is that Everett had played so well for the few years before that the leash isn't so short there. Mm-hmm. And that they probably aren't looking to trade a first-round pick for a quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
Like you mentioned, since they were so good for the few years before that, I don't think that all of a sudden they get the outlandish idea to get a new GM and fire the head coach because they had maybe one down year in 91 after they had been pretty good for a few years.
Mm-hmm.
So I agree. I think Infante and even maybe Bratz holds on, you know, a few years longer in the 90s, and we become one of those teams that wins a lot. Like you said, maybe the Lions back then or the Houston Oilers that wins a lot, makes the playoffs almost every year, but really doesn't have the weapons to really make a push. If you put Everett on this, say like the 95-96 team with a ton of other talent around him, I don't think that he's the kind of quarterback that's going to take you over the top, even with that defense.
Mm-hmm.
He's not enough to carry that entire offense, which frankly wasn't super talented back then. I know we have fond memories of a lot of those guys, but Antonio Freeman, Robert Brooks, Edgar Bennett, these aren't Hall of Fame players.
Mm-hmm.
Brett Favre made them look a lot better. So, in my opinion, we don't trade for Brett Favre because, like I said, you have a quarterback who's been really good for the last 3 or 4 years. You're not going to trade a first-round pick for one. And so Everett stays the starter. We're consistent, but I think Infante's regime lasts a little longer. We miss out on Holmgren. We miss out on Wolf. You know, it's kind of hard to judge on that what the current team is going to look like. It's impossible to really say what would have happened after the Infante era was done.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that the Infante era is prolonged into the 90s, and we are a consistent playoff team, but no Super Bowls in the 90s.
Yeah, I think you bring up a lot of the great points that maybe I didn't touch on. The only thing I could think of that maybe gets Infante out of there is they were still kind of a horribly managed team. They had a lot of different fiascos to get guys like Brent Fullwood and Tim Harris and really good players on the team leaving town in really weird ways. You got to think that maybe a guy like Bob Harlan, who under this scenario, we still think the Packers struggle. I still think Bob Harlan gets hired, especially since he was hired more of to be a management guy than a football guy. I think that it's possible that he still gets fed up with the way the team is being run because they just can't. It seems like every year in the 80s especially, they can't sign their draft picks, and they're getting people are holding out. I mean, they go 10-6 in 1989, and they have like 5 offensive starters hold out. And got Don Majkowski, who was the NFL MVP runner-up in 1989, doesn't even start the first 2 games because he gets into camp so late. They have to play Anthony Dilwig in the first 2 games. I mean, it's a chance a lot of this stuff wouldn't happen, but even with a guy like Jim Everett, you got to wonder if maybe Bob Harlan says, enough of this already. This regime is toxic. We have some talent around here. We should be even better than we are. And maybe Infante doesn't get thrown out, but you might still get a guy like Ron Wolf. And that kind of brings up something that you touched upon, where Jim Everett retired in 1997. He would have been 33 years old when the Packers won the Super Bowl in 1996. So I don't think they're winning a Super Bowl in 1996 with Jim Everett. But it's possible that maybe they keep Everett as a placeholder, and they're still, maybe they're in the playoffs in 1989, 1990. Maybe they get back in 92 and 93. And who knows, maybe they don't trade for Brett Favre, but maybe guys like Ty Detmer or maybe guys like Mark Brunell are still there. What do you think the odds are of the Packers winning a Super Bowl with like Mark Brunell or Ty Detmer in 1996?
Yeah, that'd be pretty interesting to have gotten to see Brunell get a chance on those teams. But, I mean, at that point in their career, maybe if you take in his prime Mark Brunell, throw him into 96, sure, maybe I'll buy that. But I think where he was at that point, probably not much better, and I don't think Ty Detmer ever proved himself as a starting quarterback either. So,
yeah.
I mean, you know, at least you're not completely bottomed out probably with those guys at quarterback. It would be interesting to see, like I said, like in his prime, Mark Brunell on the 96 team. It would be kind of cool to see where they would go with that, but mm-hmm. Not a Super Bowl contending team, I think, with where those quarterbacks were at then.
Yeah, and I know people will say, well, Brunell got to the AFC Championship game in 1996 with Jacksonville. I think he led the NFL in passing yards, but he still had like 19 touchdowns, 20 picks.
Yeah.
And people, I think, forget now that weren't fans back then or haven't really paid attention to history since it's happened. But getting to the Super Bowl in the AFC in 1996 was about half as hard as it was getting to the Super Bowl in the NFC in 96.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I guess I wouldn't know. And it's another one of those things that maybe people who have soured on him a little bit don't want to hear, but that number 4 guy is pretty darn important when it comes to, to winning the Super Bowl in the 90s.
Oh, absolutely. And like I said earlier, there's no other quarterbacks, really, in my opinion, that we would have at least had the chance to have a starting force at that time that would have gotten nearly that much out of that group of players that he had on offense.
Mm-hmm. And I think some of those guys are a tad underrated, especially guys like Dorsey Levins, I think, was Antonio Freeman, I think, is a lot better than he gets credit for. Mark Chimura, when he wasn't hurt, was probably one of the top 2 or 3 tight ends in football, but a lot of that is Brett Favre, I think. I mean, there's a lot of really good tight ends and a lot of really good wide receivers, and when they're playing with guys like, you know, Joey Harrington or something like that, they're just not very good. So I think, yeah, without Brett Favre, even with a guy like Jim Everett, so, yeah, I think you might even replace them with the Rams. Maybe they're the Rams, like you said. In the late 80s, they're making the playoffs every year. They're getting to the divisional round. They might get to the NFC Championship game, but they're not going to beat San Francisco or the Giants or the Redskins or the Cowboys. So I think it probably was very frustrating, and from the tune of the articles I read, people were very frustrated that they weren't able to land Jim Everett, and it sounded like pure incompetence is all that it prevented the Packers from getting Jim Everett from Houston. But it's another one of those scenarios where I think the misery of those poor folks watching the Packers from 1968 until 1991 made it a lot better for all of us who got to join the party later.
Yeah, and maybe that's something we need to keep in mind when we're going through our struggles, you know, in more current recent history here, is that it seems like every time we look back at, you know, something that went wrong here, like Majkowski gets hurt or we don't get Everett, you know, or multiple things here which we've talked about that seem awful at the time, they always end up working out better in the long run.
Yeah, well, there's something to keep in mind if the Packers are getting hammered at some point this year. Like, hey, maybe it'll lead to good things later down the road.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so that's another what if, and we're obviously looking for a ton of topics, and there's a lot of stuff in the 70s, and even if you want to go back to stock sales in the 1930s, we can talk about that too. So if you have any topics in mind, send them to us at any of those outlets that we told you about before, and we'd love to hear your ideas, because there's so many things that happened in Packers history, and there's even more things that almost happened in Packers history that can be just as interesting. So send us your ideas for what if, and we'll try to get to them as fast as we can. We're going to do one about every other week in the regular season, so keep sending those in. So that's another episode of Green and Gold Forever, and we got a big game to talk about next time around, and then we'll have another one just a couple of days after that with two games in 5 days. So that's going to be something to look forward to. And Matt and I are actually going to Lambeau Field to view the San Francisco 49ers game, and I don't remember the last time have they ever lost a game when we went together?
Yep, we were at the, unfortunately, at the Houston Texans game in 2008, was it?
Yeah. I think our tickets were really cheap, though. Didn't we get them, like, 3 days before for, like, half price?
Yep, and I remember everybody, especially you, leaving the stadium just cursing out Aaron Rodgers, and we thought he was going to be done in Green Bay because he looked so bad.
He looked awful in that game.
He was really bad that day.
I mean, I thought he was okay, and then seeing him live, I thought, oh, boy, he's not quite as good as I thought he was. But the last couple times we went, we actually saw, quick fun fact, we went to Cleveland. Us and a group of people went to Cleveland to see the game there, and that's actually his highest quarterback rating for a single game still, is that Cleveland Browns game. So we saw a little bit of Aaron Rodgers' history. So hopefully we can see some more. Maybe he'll break that record this Sunday. So everybody join us next week. Look on about Monday night, Tuesday morning. We should have another episode up there for you. And send us your comments. If you just have a comment about the game, just send them in. Even if you just got to get something off your chest and rant about the fact that they cut your favorite player or that they didn't run the play that you thought they should have run on fourth down and two, and just let us know and we'll share it on the air. So join us next week, everybody, and enjoy the start of the NFL season. Take care, everyone.